The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dennis Norden, Dillis Powell, and Frank Muir. Here's round one, and for 2 marks, I want to know the meaning of the following words. We begin with Dillis Powell. What's the meaning of sternutation? S-T-E-R-N, like stern, and U-T-A-T-I-O-N. Sternutation. That's right. 2 marks.
Sneezing.
Means sneezing, the act of sneezing.
I thought the sternum was rather lower. I would have said that forget it.
2 marks anyway. Dennis Norden, what is a midinet? M-I-D-I-N-E-T-T-E. Midinet.
It's used by fishermen. It's a sort of calf-length net. but mainly, it's a girl who works in a shop in Paris, or used to work in a shop in Paris. It was a great feature of sort of Michael Arlen novels and things like that. And they were reckoned to be, somebody said you could call them like the chorus of a song because they were not averse.
Well done, Dennis. Very full descriptions. 2 marks. Parisian shop girl, particularly a milliner's assistant, and probably because of the two words, midi meaning noon and dinette, which means a rather small dinner, they ate very quickly at lunchtime and were about on the streets during the dinner hour. To, 2 marks.
Not with much success.
And now Anne Scott James, the meaning of fescue. F-E-S-C-U-E.
Ah, that's what one's tennis court, which is meant to be made of the finest grasses, is always full of.
Yes.
It's rough, coarse grass.
Yes, that'll do. 2 marks. Frank Muir, what is a cod piece?
It's an article of gentleman's clothing.
Yes.
It's,
not that good.
Yes, I would describe it as a Renaissance Sassenach jockstrap.
Worn on the front of the breeches and prominent in Tudor times. It's certainly good enough for 2 marks. Well, before we begin round two, I'm going to read out a quotation for each team to write down, and then I want the two women members to study those quotations, because at the end of the program, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. Phyllis Bowen and Frank Muir, your quotation is "Believe it or not," and Anne Scott James and Dennis, yours is "Blood is thicker than water." And then in the last round of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their idea of how these came to be said or written. Well, next a round of who, what, why, where questions. For 2 marks, can you tell me, Dillis Powell, what and where is Death Valley?
Death Valley is a desert.
Where?
In America.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts, roughly?
Rather kind of southish. And in a film called Greed, the hero and his opponent both arrive there, and that's the end of them.
Yes, it's the end of quite a lot of people. It's a singularly inhospitable and completely waterless valley in California, so deep that it's about 280 feet below sea level, and it's an appallingly dangerous bit that the frontiersmen, the westerners, had to cross in order to try and colonize California, hence the name. Yes. Dennis Norden, where would you find the Kaaba, and what is it? K-A-A-B-A, Kaaba.
Kaaba is... Kaaba is where the hydrates come from. they're also found in the dance macabre. The macabre is where the Scottish hydrates come from. I've never even seen the word. That is awfully useful in Scrabble if you've got left with three A's.
It is. It's very good for that. Yes. Mm.
I really don't know.
No, it's at Mecca, and where Muhammad was born, and it's the sacred shrine of the Muslim religion, which the pilgrims go to visit, which contains the black stone, which the pilgrims kiss, and on Resurrection Day, the black stone will have two eyes, so as to recognize all those who've kissed it, and a tongue with which to praise Allah. Oh. So it's the center of the Mohammedan religion.
Thank you.
Oh. And Scott James, what and where are or were the Hanging Gardens?
Well, they were in Babylon. They were the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which are one of the seven wonders of the world.
Quite right. And what were they like?
They were terraced. Terraced gardens.
What were the Hanging Gardens? Why are they called Hanging Gardens?
Because it was a very fat place. It was Babylon, next door to Nebuchadnezzar's palace. And Nebuchadnezzar had a wife who came from hilly country in Media, and she hated all this fat bit. And so he built up gardens on terraces up to 300 feet above the surface of the flat bit and watered them from cisterns from above. And that's why they call the Hanging Gardens, because nothing like that had ever been seen before. And that's why, as Anne says, it was one of the seven wonders of the world.
You're rather glad I asked, aren't you?
yes, it came in a rather unexpected shape, as it usually does, Frank. Now back to Frank Miller himself. Who, what, or where is Fernando Poo? Fernando like Fernando, and Poo like P-double-O.
Well, Fernando Poe...
Yes, hello.
...is an island...
Yes.
It's a Spanish island on the coast of Africa.
Well done.
Well, no, I know that because the consul there was... His son was at prep school with my son. It was named after the Spaniard who discovered the island, Fernando Po, which is a translation of Fred Chambers.
Well, I can't beat that one. It's off the west coast of Africa, and the bit called Rio Muni, and as Frank says, it does belong to Spain. In fact, the people who live there are treated as Spanish citizens. 2 marks. Next comes a round of differences. I want you to define the differences in meaning between the following pairs of fairly similar sounding words. Again, 2 marks each time. Notice, Powell, the difference between complacence and complaisance. A-C-E-N-C-E and A-I-S-A-N-C-E. Complacence.
Complacence means the condition of being rather satisfied with yourself.
Yes.
Complacence means the condition of being rather agreeable to somebody else, ready to agree with something.
Yes. Good. 2 marks it is. Dennis Norton, ligature and ligament.
They're both... a bit medical. Now, ligature is something that surgeons use professionally, not socially. I don't know, it ties up something. Quite what it ties up, I don't know. A ligament is a part of your body that you pull.
I've pulled one once and I've been staggering.
I think 1.5. Ligature is a thing used in tying, and a band or a cord to tie up things like arteries when they get broken, or to strangulate a tumour, so on. A ligament is a short band of tough, flexible, fibrous tissue which binds bones together, or it can be any membrane keeping an organ in roughly the right position. Now on to Anne Scott James. Deprecate and depreciate.
To deprecate means rather to apologize. Depreciate means what my shares do. Quite simple, perfectly simple one. That just means running down.
Yes, I think that's quite right for depreciate. Depreciate is to diminish in value or to lower the market price of, which is what I think Anne was saying, or to reduce the purchasing power, or to belittle. But to deprecate is to express a wish against, or to disapprove something, or to plead against it. You deprecate war, you deprecate panic, or hasty action, or something of that kind. Now, Frank, you know, gombeen and gombroon.
Thank you.
G-O-M-B-E-E-N, Gombeen, and Gombroon, B-R-O-O-N, Gombeen, Gombroon.
There's no difference. I don't know what I mean.
Yes.
Gombeen's a lad.
As a what?
A lad?
Yes.
Gombeen's a lad.
You
must be mad, woman.
A lad.
A Gombeen is a mad lad.
Yes, but he has a particular trade. He is a chap.
He's gumless.
He's a roistering lad.
He's over 40. Over the channel in Ireland.
Yes, it is. Isn't it? Didn't I say just the same thing? It's an Irish lad.
It certainly is. No. Right, half mark so far. Gombroon, you're going to have a shot at that?
Gombroon isn't. Gombroon isn't an Irish lad. Otherwise, there'd be no question, wouldn't
there? I don't think you're going to get that. I'm going to give you half a mark. Gombeen in Anglo-Irish means usury, and a Gombeen man is a moneylender, just quite straightforward. Gombroon is very different. It's a type of Persian pottery, which is imitated in Chelsea pottery, in certain types of Chelsea ware. It comes from the name of a town on the Persian Gulf. And now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the teams earlier in the programme. The two marks still is power. Can you give me the origin of your quotation, believe it or not?
There used to be a kind of, not exactly strip cartoon, but strip account of curious happenings which one didn't believe by somebody called Ripley.
Absolutely right. Well
believe
done.
It or not.
That's right. Yes, I once gave my wife a bathrobe which had all these sort of coloured cartoons on it, and they were quite surprising. One was a cat fitted with spectacles, and the other was a fish that climbed trees, and there were even more dubious ones as well. Two marks. Now, Anscot James, the origin of your quotation, blood is thicker than water.
She was expecting a mink, you know.
Every week you give me a proverb, and I'm sick of it. It's a proverb.
All right. I don't think I can fault you. It was also the reply of a American naval officer who went to the rescue of some Englishmen in difficulty when they were in terrible trouble with the Chinese, and then he had to explain why he did this, and he said, blood is thicker than water. So, but I think proverbially is quite good enough. 2 marks. Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being, and for this round only, the marks will go to whichever improbable story receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So we go back to Frank Muir. Frank, believe it or not.
Brothers and sisters, I cannot tell you the change in the home of my good wife and myself since we were converted. It happened one morning, these two young men came to the door and said, we are here to convert you. And I said, Jehovah's Witnesses? And he said, no, North Thames Gas. I think I should explain to those unfortunate members living in this country who haven't yet been converted to North Thames Gas, and to our overseas listeners, that horrible old-fashioned, dreary natural gas that we've been flogging along on for the last almost 200 years is now being replaced by North Sea gas, which admittedly is more expensive and less efficient. But they hope, with a bit of luck, if it catches on, we'll bankrupt the National Coal Board. And all the appliances have to be converted to this when it comes to your district. We only had one piece of equipment, which was gas, which was a refrigerator. And these gentlemen adapted it and went away. So the following morning, the refrigerator went out. So we lit it and it went out. So I rang up the North Thames Gas. And the girl said, well, oh, Mr. Miller, yes, it's your gas fire, isn't it, in the kitchen? So I said, no, it's a refrigerator. She said, oh, yes. Well, look, I'm awfully sorry. You do get these teething troubles. We'll get all the fitters are out at the moment. Would June do? This was March. So I said, look, no, it won't. You know, the milk's going off and the kipper's gone phosphorescent. And she said, well, look, love. She said, now, have you got it?
Have you got the fridge up as high as it'll go? You have to have it up as high as it'll go. Otherwise, the gas, the pressure isn't the same. It'll go out. So I said, well, no, thank you very much. She said, right, I'll put the booking in for June. So I said to my good lady, I said, the fridge has got to go up as high. I would like here to pay tribute to my wife. She's a frail girl. She wasn't feeling well. And there she had that fridge on her back. Well, I was urging the sideboard under it. We managed to wedge it up so that the fridge was as high as it could go. It was touching the ceiling. And the rubber tube was stretched so it was as thin as a bit of spaghetti. But the thing wouldn't light. It wouldn't light. So I rang up. Hello, Mr. Muir. Oh, it's your gas fire, isn't it? It's the fridge. She said, oh, yes. She said, well, your fridge might have a gas leak. She said, take the rubber pipe out at the back and make sure the gas is coming through. So I said, well, how do I make sure the gas is coming through? She said, oh, strike a light. No. It was... What ensued was a very nasty experience. There wasn't a bang, there was sort of a whoosh, which singed half my moustache. I stood there semi-detached. And my wife said, no, go and complain. The only thing is going to complain. You're always so polite. Go to the gas manager, beard him in his den, if he's got a beard, and say, you demand satisfaction. Get angry. She said, anyway, you can get the satisfaction, you'll be angry. So I went round to the gas showrooms, and I marched into the office, and I said, look here, gas manager, you're an incompetent fool. My refrigerator is not working. Well, all I can say is, thank heavens the room was empty. He came in shortly afterwards, and I said, now look, and I was really... He was rather a large man, and I was so frightened, I sort of went white and trembled. And I said, look, about my refrigerator, it doesn't work, you've got to do something about it. I was really sort of livid with sort of fear and terror and afraid of going back to my wife. And he said, leave it to me, sir. And the following day was Saturday. He said, we'll do something by tomorrow. And I said, well, we're going away, but we'll leave the house open. He said, right. We came back on Monday, and by golly, they had done something. They'd taken the old fridge right away, and there in its place, beautifully plumbed in, was a brand new gas fire. And there's a little note on it saying that we have credited you with £1.40, value in scrap of your old refrigerator. My wife was so proud of me. She says that would never have happened if you hadn't been strong with him. So what I say to you is, if you have these gas conversion things that are in trouble, you must not only be angry, but be white with fury. Otherwise, nothing happens. Or as Ripley says, be livid or not.
Well, what a terrible saga. Now we go back to Dennis Norton, and if you remember, his quotation was, blood is thicker than water.
I was thinking the other day how unfair it is that people make so much more fuss about Mother's Day than they do about Father's Day. To me, it's like ignoring the architect and honouring the building contractor. Because when you get right down to it, it is not mothers, it is fathers who children drive really raving berserk. Last week on Woman's Hour, there was some idiot crone who said, what is a home without children? Well, I can tell that lady what a home is without children. It is tidy. Now, if there's a touch of frenzy in this statement, it's not because I regard tidiness as any kind of paramount virtue. It's because the reason for it is that I am approaching the age when the statistics for coronary attacks start climbing. And not long ago, when I went into my bathroom after a rather thick night, I very nearly became a statistic. Because there, hanging over the shower rail, was a thing crouching, reaching for me. I shrieked. No! No! What is that? My teenage daughter came running in. Easy now, old fella, she said. They have this way of talking to you as though that commandment read, humour thy father. Look, I said, pointing. It's poised to strike. Good dad, she said, it's only my purple tights moving in the breeze. Purple tights, I sobbed. It's got a furry body. She said, I washed my hairpiece as well. It's like living with some crazed Red Indian warrior. And what is so peculiarly galling about it is what she attacks me for. Your generation, she says, has poisoned this planet. Oh, look, don't start, I say, please. I didn't touch it. And if I did, I'm sorry. Apathy, she says, is not enough. What my generation is pledged to do, we are going to clean up the environment. Good, I say, right. Start with your room. Now, I want to tell you about that room. It's like carnival night at the rubbish tip. Nobody is allowed to touch it. Leave it alone, she says. It may look untidy, but I know where everything is. Well, a few weeks ago, I snapped. I put my foot down in the one way that a determined father has left to exert authority. Bribery. Look, I said, here's £1. Now, don't ever let me see your room looking like this again. And it worked. She took the money, and I have not seen her room looking like that since. She bought a padlock for the door. You can't beat them, and they won't let you join them. In the generation war, I am now just another of the walking wounded. Or put it another way, Dad is thicker than daughter.
And by your vote, ladies and gentlemen, Frank Muir wins the contest of the stories, but nevertheless the other team, Anne Scott James and Dennis, win the entire contest, and that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden introduced by Jack Longland, who also compiled the questions. The program was devised by Tony Schryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.
You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.